Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today our special guest is Tom Anderson. Tom has served as president of RETA for the last 4 years. Tom has more than 44 years' experience in banking and was the founder and former president and CEO of Pensco Trust Company. He is currently on the board of Pensco Holding LLC. He was also the founder and president of Pensco Pension Services, an IRS-approved non-bank custodian and broker-dealer, and founder and president of Financial Information Services, FIS, a bank consulting company. Tom, we really welcome you to our show.
Well, thanks a lot, Bruce. We've known each other for a number of years, and it's always a pleasure to work with you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. The idea of self-directed now is 30 years old. So what was the original motivation for the government to approve self-directed retirement plans?
Well, it goes back to the growth of traditional pension plans after the war. And as they grew, the government found that there were more abuses where they were either underfunded, and organizations that sponsored them, like Studebaker, which is the famous situation, didn't have enough money to obligate or to meet their obligations to their employees. So the government created ERISA in 1974 to deal with that kind of a situation, but also abuse where trustees were actually taking their employees' money and doing personal things with it, and they felt that they needed to clean up the traditional pension area. At the same time, as an extra protection, they created individual retirement arrangements, which are now known as IRAs, to sort of as a catch-all to allow an individual to save for themselves and to control their destiny, if you will.
And as it turns out, I mean, that's been an excellent idea, because we all kind of know the status of some of the defined benefit plans.
Yeah, ironically, although ERISA certainly did a lot to clean up abuses, the government post-2008 economic downturn actually thought about getting rid of 401ks and trying to devise an annuity that always worked for everybody so that they'd be assured some retirement savings. Of course, that's a theory and not probably a practical reality, but in any case, they came around as the stock market recovered, people's pension plans recovered. But individual retirement accounts allowed people to, you know, rearrange their asset allocation and get into assets that protected somewhat against downturns, things like real estate and private equity that aren't as liquid and as volatile and not tied to the daily markets.
In the approximate 30 years that these have existed, what is the amount of money or the amount of assets in those self-directed accounts?
Well, it's almost doubled in the last 15 years, or actually no less than that. It's now over $7 trillion, but I think it was like 4.6 in 2011, so it's really growing. And a lot of that growth comes from the movement of retirees moving out of their traditional pension plans into IRAs, or rolling them over, as they say. And as we all know, it's an aging population, so more and more people are retiring, and they're taking their, you know, their pension plans that they accumulated over their entire career and putting them into self-directed retirement accounts, and other IRAs for that matter.
I really don't know the answer to this question, and if you don't, that's fine too, but $7 trillion, it sounds like a lot of money. How does that compare, let's say, to the money that's supposed to be in a defined benefit plan nationally? Does anybody know that number?
Oh, I'm sure the government does.
Okay.
Actually, the $7 trillion now exceeds all other pension plans, including defined contribution and defined benefits.
Wow. Okay.
So that really, well, defined benefits are sort of like the dodo bird. They just, companies have realized that they can't guarantee the future, and there's been too many issues with those, other than individual retirement accounts or, you know, individual defined benefit plans. But corporate ones are really going up, you know, by the wayside. But The the government is concerned about that. They're not unaware that this has been there's been a shift out of defined contribution pension plans into IRAs, and that's why we're seeing more and more potential regulation coming down on IRAs.
Okay, $7 trillion that basically hasn't paid any tax yet. So the government has to be kind of looking at that, wondering if they can tap in that some way. Is that true, or did they?
Absolutely. There's been all kinds of interesting, and some would say bizarre, ideas. When you recognize the idea was for people to save for the retirement on their own, you would think that that would generally be encouraged, and the incentives were given, the tax deferred and the tax free with the Roth IRA or after tax Roth IRA, were devised to encourage people to save. And now, sort of the post Mitt Romney situation that the Democrats sort of jumped on, where there was question about how he made all his money out of his retirement plan and into his IRA.
Right.
There's been thoughts about putting a cap on how much people can save. You know, we don't want you to be too successful, so you're going to be limited to saving this much or that much.
Well, and it's not only what you save, it's what it earns. So now you're in trouble if it earns a lot.
Absolutely. And so there's been thoughts about capping the amounts. There's been thoughts about eliminating the inherited IRA, allowing it to take distributions over the lifetimes of the beneficiaries. There's been thoughts about even continuing the Roth IRA or limiting the contributions to both that and the IRA. So there's been a lot of issues. The IRS 2 years ago came out and required that custodians start to break down all the asset types in IRAs with the idea that there was abuse going on in the valuations of some of the alternative assets, and the last year was the first year the reporting took place. So it'll be interesting to see what comes from that. But all custodians, at least those that are members of our association, which are mostly regulated entities, are always interested in doing the right thing, which includes meeting the law, and that is, you know, reporting valid valuations on assets. It's a somewhat imperfect world, but we always try to raise the bar the best we can.
I kind of have a wide scope of friends, and some of them are more skittish about the possibilities that government might be interested in almost doing a confiscation of retirement monies and making it like a forced annuity. Any truth to that
exactly.
at all?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. The current administration has been talking about that for years. It really is a split across party lines. It's more of a Democratic issue, and it's more about the 1% and sort of social class warfare that we hear about all the time in the press, and redistribution of wealth, et cetera. And I think, you know, there was a study initiated by Senator Ron Wyden out of Oregon a couple of years ago that the GAO conducted, and you know, the response from the GAO back to him was that there's a very small percentage of people that really are making, you know, lots and lots of money. I mean, in the hundreds or maybe 1,000 people in the United States. So, you know, really, there's a misconception about either abuse, if you would call success an abuse, or, you know, the amount of wealth that's being created in IRAs. It's consistent with the amount of wealth that's created in pension plans.
I remember reading something in an IMF report where they had kind of thought about the idea of just a one-time wealth tax. So you could solve all this budget problem by just levying a 20% asset tax one time.
I can't really do the numbers on that, but certainly with the deficits that we're, you know, dealing with as a country, government is always looking for the largest targets, and you know there is an awful lot of money, $7 trillion in IRAs. So if they drain that bathtub of funds, it would certainly go a long way to decreasing the deficit, but the likelihood of that ever happening politically, the public would never stand for that.
I would hope not. One other suggestion, a forced Roth. Is that a topic that's been brought up?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's circulated within the administration, but it hasn't come forward as a bill. And considering it's an upcoming election here, I don't think you're going to see any movement on any of these ideas that have been floated until we get through the election. But, depending on your political position, and there will definitely be some opposing effects of some of these ideas depending on the outcome of the election.
RITA stands for Retirement Industry Trade Association. Trust Association.
Yeah.
What do you guys do for the industry?
Well, basically, we're a forum for, a collective voice to the government, and we've been successful over the last 7 or 8 years in developing a good rapport with the main agencies in government that affect retirement accounts, including the Department of Labor, the IRS, and some of the enforcement agencies like the North American Securities Administration Association of Securities Regulators, as well as the SEC. And, we meet with them on a regular basis. We lobby to them about our views on issues. We participate in testimony, either written or in person, on the major issues, including the recent, actually it's about to be announced, I think next week or this week, Department of Labor conflict of interest proposal. So we were heavily involved in initial input on the first round, and then the second round, which is supposed to conclude shortly. We were also active, but more in a written form. But in any case, we act as a fulcrum for our issues as an industry group. We develop best practices amongst the industry participants, which we share with them. We provide education not only internally to all of our members and their employees through our RITA Institute. It's an educational institute, but to the public and to regulators. We've actually had some of the regulators of our institutions attend our classes, and we've gotten very good feedback. We've also provided information to some of the enforcement agencies about our anti-fraud measures that they found to be very helpful, and we've actually taught anti-fraud to some of the regulators. So we're active in that way and through education. We started out as sort of like any organization in its infancy. I think it was more of a social group of, senior people involved in the industry trying to share ideas. And, many years ago when we first were going, I remember going to these meetings and very, very few detailed activities were discussed amongst the group. People were concerned about competition. But these days, everything's on the table, and it's a very open and fluid conversation, and it's all designed to help everybody that's a member, but also to improve the practices in the industry.
The membership in RITA, what would be the scope of what the, like the job categories of the members? What array?
Yeah, well, a few years ago, we were consisting really of only regulated financial institutions, either trust companies that are state regulated by state banking departments or federally chartered and regulated banks. And we decided, since there were other entity groups in the business, either one form or another, that we would embrace those groups, and we created different categories of membership. So now we have associate members, which are basically, for the most part, third-party administrators that do a lot of the record-keeping and reporting for custodial banks that have the legal responsibility of the custodian. We also have service members, and those include, companies that provide services such as, you know, statement printing or handling valuations or providing legal advice or whatever. So that we have different categories now of membership. So we broaden the membership. We now have a total of about 40 companies that are members, and that's growing on an annual basis.
You have a large meeting in March. What are some of the hot topics that will be discussed?
Well, yes, we have one of the things we do in March is, which we find to be the most valuable to our members, is that we go to Washington and we invite a lot of the key players in the government that influence our industry. And we're very proud of the fact that we've developed long-standing relationships with these key people come on a regular basis and share their knowledge. They share their, you know, their insight on where things are going. And they do. I think that we've come to be respected as a cooperative member of the retirement space. And it's taken us a while to get there, but I think we've developed that credibility with all the things I mentioned earlier. And this is an opportunity for anybody who attends to really rub elbows with some of the movers and shakers in the government affecting retirement accounts. One person alone, Mark Eary, he reports to President Obama on any retirement issues. He's been in the government for many years, and he's sort of considered the guru in the entire administration on retirement issues. And he comes and is one of our key speakers. So we have people from the IRS. We have people, hopefully, from the Department of Labor coming, even though we have issues there, which we discussed earlier with the conflict of interest proposal. But, you know, we agree to disagree sometimes, and sometimes we agree as well. But, you know, the topics will be traditional things, including we have a lot of breakout sessions where they're designed for members and interested parties to find out, you know, what is the best practice or what are people doing in certain areas. We're also going to be looking at dealing with older clients in terms of being responsible and detecting or, you know, dealing with dementia when it occurs. And we have a couple of panels. We have the state and federal regulatory panel, which includes key people like the general counsel of the NASA or North American Administrators Association, of all state regulators. We have Executive Vice President of Enforcement with FINRA, which I'm sure you're aware of, somebody from the SEC. So we don't shy away from dealing with the people that sometimes are, you know, a concern to us because they're, for one reason or another, might be looking into our business. But we feel, you know, meeting with them on common ground and sharing ideas and thoughts and allowing them to raise their concerns is a better approach than dealing from afar. Yeah. So anybody that's either considering getting into this business or is in the business either tangentially or actively, I would highly recommend our Washington conference to, you know, somebody to attend.
Yeah, Aaron and I have attended that several times, found it very valuable. And it's important to have a group such as Rita to be there because, you know, gradually you've gained confidence. They've gained, you know, they trust you. And so your input is valuable. And sometimes big mistakes can be avoided because you can reason with people and say, you know, it sounds like a good idea, but it wouldn't have a good outcome.
Absolutely. I mean, we've actually, you know, provided, I think, positive input and helpful input to some of the proposals that either the IRS or the Treasury Department or DOL have contemplated in the past, and I think their input has been respected. So we also have a Treasury and Congress panel, again with Mark Eary, whose official title is Senior Advisor to the Secretary and Deputy Assistant Secretary of Retirement and Health Policy in the Department of Treasury. We've got tax counsel from the Committee on Ways and Means, from the House of Representatives. We have a senior counsel from the Health, Education, and Labor Committee. we're talking about the, you know, these are the key people that are making these laws and proposals to Congress. Somebody from the Senate Finance Committee as well. So, you know, as I said, we're dealing with the top movers and shakers. We also have somebody this time from the Senior Director of Retirement Research at the Investment Company Institute, which is probably the foremost information source on retirement assets in the country. Although they're focused primarily on mutual funds, they track all kinds of retirement issues.
You know, when we talk about $7 trillion, it sounds like an enormous amount of money, and then I'll read a report and 50% of the people are going to retire with $50,000, and Social Security represents more than half their income. So are those statements true as well?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, it's an education process. It really starts with parents, I think, and schools teaching young children and their own children, you know, the concept of savings, and you know, not enough of that is going on. So there are a lot of outreach programs talking on financial literacy at the ground or the grassroots of the early stages, and I think that's really important. And beyond that, Mark Eary has, you know, come up with a proposal that is now in pilot on a sort of an opt-out, it's automatic opt-in program to set up an IRA account for companies that don't otherwise have a pension plan or IRA plan for their employees, and it's almost at no cost to the company to do it. And they will basically run this program, which goes into Treasury bills until it reaches $15,000 for an individual employee, at which time they have to move it into the private sector. But it's sort of a starter kit for retirement savings. And, you know, quite frankly, if a young person goes to work at age, you know, 21 or whatever, when they get out of college, and they're automatically thrown into a program like that, they're going to develop a $15,000 nest egg well into their early 20s, which hopefully will encourage them to continue because they can see, you know, how it grows.
Are the millennials savers? Because I know they're not necessarily real estate buyers.
Are they? I'm sorry, I missed the first part of that.
Are millennials savers? I noticed that they're not much for buying real estate.
Well, you know, it's hard for me to say because my company is near Silicon Valley, and so a lot of those people are savers. They're savvy, and you know, but I think on a national basis or on a percentage basis, I don't think we're there yet. But I don't have any empirical data on that to report on. But it's a good question. You know, I've never really seen data broken down by demographics in terms of age groups. It's probably there somewhere. I just haven't seen it. I really can't say. I know the majority of the wealth and retirement accounts, for the reasons I talked about yesterday, particularly in IRAs, is in the older group because they're coming out of their pension plan. So it's, you know, IRA balances are skewed towards the older people for that reason.
When we only have a minute left in the segment. So when people come out of other retirement accounts, they can have a non-taxable transfer into their IRAs. Is that how that works?
Exactly. There are several choices. They either can do a partial rollover directly to the trustee or custodian, or they can do it indirectly where they get the funds. And then if they do that, they will have to have 20% withheld automatically before the fund sponsor or the pension sponsor will release the funds, because that's the requirement under law. But then if they roll any portion of it back into an IRA, and it's up to them as to how much. It could be 100%, it could be 30% or whatever. That will be tax deferred. So they can go that way, or they can move it into either another company's pension plan or just take a distribution of it.
Okay. Tom, we're out of time for this segment. We've been speaking with Tom Anderson, president of RITA, and we'll be back in do another segment with him. Tom, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. I enjoyed it. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.